Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Like, there's one old gentleman who was not, he did not speak at all. He was not even look at me, and he was humping there all the time. And the daughter and the son were doing the talking, and he looked really weak. And the look at the film, it was very typical of the pneumonia they're talking about. But he was not able to get in the hospital because of his test. He was not able to get a test. And the family was very desperate. So I told them that you need to stay, but there's no hospital bed at that time. I said, you need to stay here, wait. We'll try to do something because I'm not going to let him go. He could not even walk. And so the son was very moved, and he was thanking me and did some small talk and telling me how difficult, because finally he said he found someone who was willing to take them in because they have been to several hospitals. And then my colleague and my assistant told them that this doctor here is volunteering. He usually doesn't work here, because he asked me some questions I could not answer. So he was explaining to him, saying that I was volunteering. Then the guy started crying. He said, oh, thank God, you know, because he did not say thank God, of course, it was China. Something like that. He said, oh, I heard in the news that doctors from other places, other cities coming to Wuhan to help because of the shortage. He said, doctor, where are you from? I said, I'm from Chicago. And he was shocked. And he really basically just broke down. And he started asking me questions. I could not talk because I was choked up. And I didn't want them to know. So I just basically using my hand gestures like this, communicating with them. So you felt that that's the only one example. There's a lot of desperation because people that they need to be in the hospital, but they couldn't get in. Because the hospitals have been overwhelmed. There's not enough specially designated bed, isolation bed. It's a very grave situation. You feel helpless, you cannot do anything. But so that day I had several patients like that. I told at least 3 of them to stay. And then after an hour, the nurse announced, came to me saying that they just opened another new area of the ward, so they have extra bed. So they were all able to get in. So that's the best thing I felt good about myself, that I actually helped a few patients. And so afterwards, I was very nervous. I came out. Because in that protective gear is very difficult. And so, you know, later I said, I could leave anytime because I was volunteering. Nobody forced me. So I felt that I should come out. So I came out. And there's no one. You don't have to register with anyone. You just come out. Took out on PPEs. And so I did not want to eat.
I'm sorry, that was one day?
That was one day, yeah.
And how many hours in that day did you work
I forgot.
That
maybe like 5 or 6 hours. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Yeah, so you came out and then went back to your other job, or what you were doing before?
Yeah, we don't really have another job at that time, because only people who are assigned to clinical works, they will have to work. Most people are staying at home. Because that's most of the routine activities have stopped. So I came out, and the whole thing, everything was new to me, and I just walked onto the street. I had no transportation, of course. I did not want to bother, because everybody's in isolation. I don't want to bother people. Hey, can you come to pick me up? No. So I walked around. I walked a little bit. I didn't know where I was, because I'm not familiar with the area. And I saw a taxi. So I waved, and he stopped. And of course, he did not know I walked. If he knew that I was from the hospital, he would probably wouldn't do that. And then I told him where I was going, and he said there will be 10 Chinese yuan surcharge. I said, what's that for? He said, because the city has taken half of the taxis off service. They want to reduce traffic. So when you come out, you can only work for one day, next day you can't do it. So they have to do it. I said, that's fine. That's not no big deal as far as you send me home. So ever since that, I have to say that I was afraid, even though I did it. There was a risk involved, definitely. But I was hoping that I would stay healthy and not get sick. But I was very careful not to have contact with other people. So I basically isolated myself for 10 days until I came back. And I was doing everything through my phone.
When did you come out of quarantine?
18th.
The 18th?
Yes.
Okay, right. Why did you go to Wuhan in the first place?
I have been doing collaborative work in Wuhan, because our university, University of Chicago, has a long-term collaborative relationship with Wuhan University in training medical doctors, clinical care collaborations.
Nothing to do with coronavirus. You were there.
Nothing to do with coronavirus. No. This has been long term. So I have a special relationship arrangement that I'm taking a partial leave of absence from the university, and I direct a pathology lab there through this kind of arrangement. So I travel there quite regularly, frequently, and doing this. And I have been bringing pathologists and other doctors to China, and for exchange. You know, medicine is international. We also learn something from one another, and there's always some strength and weakness on either side. So it's just for the general good, human health. So I happened to be there. I did not travel there to do coronavirus. I just happened to be there in my previous arrangement. And
you spent the one day at the front, as you call it.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Which is quite unusual, because normally I never see patient. We were not meant to treat patient, but I did not treat the patient, of course. I saw them, I gave advice, I made some arrangement, and so that's what basically I did. But afterwards, because all the other medical teams, they are outside the medical teams from other part of China, Shanghai, Beijing, and those doctors start to arrive the next day. And so they don't need me, and people are concerned about my safety, because I am only visiting, and so they did not encourage me to go back. And I felt useless. So I came back.
I'm sure it were not useless.
My line of work, actually, I do a lot of that through internet. So I do consult on case on diagnosis. We can use something called the telepathology. Basically, they scan the slides in, and I can access from my computer here. So I actually got a lot of work done during quarantine.
Good.
I was very busy. By the time they asked me, those nice folks at the quarantine asked me, are you ready to go back? I said, no, I'm not. I said, oh, I have not finished my work here. They feed us 3 meals a day.
I guess there are certain good things about quarantine in a way.
No, I'm serious. You have never been one. Although in the U.S., this is the first one in 50 years. I'm not a very social kind of person, so maybe that's why. I don't need to hang out with people or drinking As far as you feed me 3 meals a day, I don't have to worry about anything.
I know what you mean. I love being in the air on an airplane because no phones to bother me. Yeah, and,
right.
And, you know, I have a set number of things I can do, and that's
right,
great.
Right.
Well, when you look back on your days in Wuhan,
yes,
and working at the hospital, especially the day at the front, I mean, obviously you helped triage, you talked to people, you did what you could. Do you feel, is it, how do you feel about it? I mean, do you feel sorry for the people who are, obviously, who are having to go through this, or in retrospect, what are you thinking about?
No, I feel very sympathetic to them, because not only they are sick, they are also very worried. The anxiety that they had, probably other people could not experience. You have to really see them. They were very afraid. And I retrospectively, I understand them more than when I was there. At that time, I did not know how many people died, and I did not know any person that I have association with who died. Only after I came out, started hearing about people who died, people that I indirectly helped who died, and people that you, under any normal circumstance, will never die. From just the fever they got. People usually can get a very good health care, like normally. And then I was shocked. And because many of those patients at that time, they come from the communities. They have seen people, their neighbors die. So they're very concerned. And I did not have that level of compassion at the time. I was very cool. I mean, not very, but I'm probably not using a very proper word for this. I was maintaining a professional level of, like, be more objective. You know, I basically assess the situation and say, oh, you should have done that. You should have stayed at home. You shouldn't have come back. But retrospectively, I knew how anxious they were. They were not doctors. They did not know. I mean, they had a fever. They hear other people. What bad things happened to them? They have to come. Right? And that's one thing. And I was not afraid at the time, even though I was very concerned. But retrospectively, I am a little bit afraid now, because I could have been. But particularly when I see several of my colleagues, I didn't know them, but you probably know that many doctors died, and they're pretty young. The youngest one was 29, and many of them are in their 40s and 50s, and they were previously healthy, and they were just like me. But they spent more time in the front, of course, and they got infected, they died. So recently I said, this could happen to anyone. Could happen to anyone, because there's no total immunity, right? And
it's a new virus, right?
It's a new virus. So anyone who is at front is at the risk. No matter whether you are old, had diabetes or hypertension, or you are young and healthy, there might be certain variabilities in terms of the proportion, you know, of people, the risk of dying. But actually, nobody is immune. So this is I consider this a life-changing event for me, even though I'm old, and I've never seen anything like this. So we don't know the exact number of death in this epidemic, in this outbreak, because of a lot of reasons. However, I've never seen, just through friends, just the person that knew my friend, who knew my friend, like one or two or three people in the whole family die of this disease. And this, I'm not talking about some homeless person. I'm talking about people who are higher up in the social status. So that's kind of scary. I didn't know this at the time.
It, it's scary for all of us. I mean, the more reports we see from around the world, I mean, who knows, maybe you'll be fighting it here too. You don't know. We don't know.
We don't know. But if I can express my own opinion on this, I think it's much, much safer in the U.S. Because the population density is much lower, and the healthcare condition is much more advanced. And another reason being that this is not new to the U.S. anymore, because this already happened in China, so there are a lot of lessons to be learned. So there'll be a better preparation in this country. So all those factors together, I personally don't think that the population in the U.S. should panic. I mean, we should be prepared, we should deal with it, but not seem to be panic.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. May I ask, where are you from, China, originally?
Originally, yes.
What part?
That's my hometown. That's another reason.
Wuhan is your hometown?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. So that's why when the university started worried about me, they had Emily Linden contacted me, because she's responsible for the hospital epidemic. So she said, you are the one there. So she immediately trying to help me to get out. I declined. I said, there's a shortage of doctors here. I'm a doctor. And this is my hometown. This is my people. No, I'm an American citizen. But you're born in China, so you cannot cut that line. And I said, if I don't stay to help, who else? And they agreed. They allowed me to stay longer.